Podtacular, episode 217, Call of Duty versus Halo Roundtable, for February 22nd, 2010. Welcome back to a very special episode of Podtacular, episode 217. We have quite a panel of guests today. First off, we have regular host Brent Gamer.
Yep, I'm here. Again.
Yes. Again.
Again. Host. They kept me on. I don't know why.
We have old host Fumo Jive.
It's happening.
We have community for a mod, Painkiller 05.
Gentlemen.
Not your engines. Anyway, we have Jack Fire Dragon from My Halo Life.
Yo. I kind of feel like I shouldn't be here.
Nah, it's cool.
I feel so alone.
All alone. There's no one here beside me. Anyways, and then we have Tide the Leader Representative Zerg-Dij.
Greetings.
So welcome everyone to this fine episode.
Thank you.
Oh, it's fine.
So we have quite a bit of little catching
up
to do with some of the people here. Let's start off with Fumo Jive. He was the old host of Podtacular up to episode 156. And how you been doing? We haven't seen you in a little while.
I've been doing real good. I'm sure you've seen like on my Facebook and Twitter and stuff, I've been doing lots of running.
Yes,
I started picking up running in about a year and a half ago or so, and ran my first marathon in November of last year. And now I run like 50 plus mile weeks and run to work and back, and do a running group at my church and doing lots of running.
Very cool. So do they have like a shower at work that you can shower down and change into clothes?
No, people always ask me that though. I used to run at lunch all the time and in the heat and everything. And what I do is I'd basically just kind of towel down after my run and, kind of wash off a little bit in the sink and, I'm good to go.
So. Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
I always tell my coworkers, like, look, if I stink, let me know, because I do not want to be stinking. They're like, you don't stink, right? So,
okay, fair enough. So
they're not just lying to me to be nice, and then be like, they turn around, they're like, man, that guy reeks, gosh.
I can smell him all the way across the room.
No, dang.
So how was your first marathon?
It was amazing. It was. Did I win? No.
For a first time, that'd be interesting.
It was really great. I mean, I could go on for this kind of stuff for hours, so I'll just keep it short and just say it is a fantastic experience that I really think that, anybody that has the physical capability to do so, like unless you have a knee blown out or something crazy like that, I highly recommend you really train and do it. It's so worth it, to know that you accomplish something that, like less than 1% of the population, will really do. And to do something, cause like the marathon's like a perfect distance because it goes just beyond how much sugar we can carry in our tanks. Often people talk about like hitting the wall at mile like 19 or 20, which means in running terms, basically you run out of fuel for your muscles. Your muscles store up fuel and eventually they run out and you basically just have to go on pure guts from there on. You have to just do mind over matter and just push through it even though you're basically like out of gas. So it's really challenging, but it's so rewarding though. So
cool.
That's really awesome.
What was your time?
It was 3:38.
Very nice. You hit under the 4 hour mark. That's really good.
Yeah, it was about an 8:10 average mile, maybe something a little under that. I'm not sure exactly. But I'm still hoping to qualify for the Boston Marathon, which means they have a qualifying system where you have to. It's based on different age brackets, and in my bracket, I have to do a 3:10 marathon, which means I think it's a 7:15 average mile.
Uh-huh.
So that's like super fast. But no,
it's quite fast. I know I couldn't do that fast. I could do that fast for a mile or two, but not for that long.
Yeah, ditto. It's tough. It's tough. But...
Well, very nice. Very nice. How's the folding bike of yours?
Oh, it's doing quite well. Thank you for asking. Yeah, it was
here and there. So
I just had to ride it recently because I had kind of some chronic ankle pain. It's been bugging me from my run commute. So I just rode it last week in and out. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice.
Quite well.
Cool. Okay, off to Jack Fire Dragon from My Halo Life. How you been doing over there? How's the situation over there at My Halo Life going? All that kind of good stuff?
Slow. Yeah, it's going slow. We're more focusing on the Cyberline stuff with like achievement guides and random videos. But, you know, we've had an uptake in subscribers lately. We've gone up to about the 5,000 mark, so...
Very nice.
People know who we are. Yeah, people know who we are now. More from, like, the ODST achievement guides. Because we got their first, and we got views and subscriptions. But slow. Right now it's a bit slow, but hopefully we'll pick it up with a couple of videos, machinimas maybe. I don't know.
Very cool.
Not much going on.
Very cool. Now, there's rumor that you guys might be starting your own podcast too, right? There's rumors around.
Back when we did 198, there was definitely a discussion that went around. It was like all set in motion, everyone was going to do it, and then for some reason we just didn't do it. We were supposed to get on, we didn't get on, and we never got around to doing it. But, you know, it's always been there. We always think we could do it. Just like random talks, not even like plan anything, just talk amongst ourselves for like half an hour, and people would probably listen to the kind of stuff we talk about. So,
yeah.
So if we can do it, yeah, I mean, it'd be great. So
cool.
I think it's something we could definitely do. That's something that we can definitely do, yeah.
Kind of do something like Drunk Tank-ish style.
Yeah, and just have special guests. You're always welcome. You know, you're a member. So, actually, you're a moderator now, so you can definitely come along. Could definitely come along, say hi, drop in.
Very nice.
And we can make you feel really, really small, like you do to us.
Yes. Okay. Now, moving on to Zerg Stege over from Tide the Leader. How you been doing over there, Zerg?
We've been doing great. You know, to date, we have 92 gunslingers in our clan, our official home team, and after a pretty hard push, we migrated most of them over to Modern Warfare 2, hopefully not to stay, just a little sabbatical to keep things fresh for them. I have certainly slowed down a little bit with regular blog updates on the Tide the Leader website. We can get into all of that later, because there's definitely a good reason for that. You know, Halo Reach comes out in the fall. We're looking forward to the beta in the spring. And in the meantime, you know, I've got dozens of gamers that I have to keep entertained with new challenges and new interactions. And, you know, that's always the goal. You know, really, at Tide the Leader, you know, we're not hosting a social lounge. It's not Facebook. We really see our website as a war room that leads to the game. And everything that we do is supposed to create action in the game. And, you know, a lot of gamers need new challenges every few months. So, you know, I think this will be an interesting discussion just because we've seen how different gamers take on different personas in playing different titles and tackling different titles. And we are still, by every means, a Halo clan, you know, a sovereign state in the Halo Nation. Hoorah. But to keep people from burning out and fading away, we are, you know, enticing them with something a little different in the off season, if you will.
Very
so
cool.
So that's what's going on.
How's the Call of Duty transitions worked?
You know, that's going to, you know, for any one gamer that wants to transition from a game like Halo to a game like Call of Duty, you know, it's all good fun. When you take 92 gamers, or, you know, 108 gamers, as it were, and say, you know, all of us are going to transition as a team into this new game, it's going to be difficult. You're going to have attrition. You're going to have frustration. You're taking people that, you know, are very competitive and very comfortable playing a game, and you're going to bust them down to private, and you're going to say, you now know nothing. You are learning how to crawl again. You're not even learning how to walk. You don't even know how to reload your gun. And we're all going to go together, and we're going to migrate to this new battlefield, and we're going to start over from scratch right where we were when we first started playing Halo 2 on Xbox Live. Some people can make that trek. Other people get frustrated, and, you know, and they can stay, you know, playing Halo. We'll still come over and see them, you know, once a week, but it's not going to be what they were used to when Halo 3 was a month old, where we had four parties rolling deep in big team battle. And, you know, at the end of the night, when it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you take those four parties and you boil the stragglers down into one room and, you know, they finish the evening together. We don't have those sorts of numbers on that battlefield anymore. It's certainly not a failing of anyone. It's not to say that Infinity Ward made a better game than Bungie Studios. It just really speaks to the attention span of your average gamer more than anything. You know, the metaphor I like to use is, no matter how much you love a video game, the best way to make you hate your favorite meal is to eat it every day for 3 years. So I think
that's true.
Options are good. You know, options keep people engaged. You know, new XP and new gamer score points keep gamers chasing that carrot. And I think that's important because, you know, in the twilight days of Halo 2, we had nothing, you know, really to do. Gears of War was amusing for, you know, about a dozen people. But, you know, we weren't able to do the sort of mass migration into Gears of War that we've been able to do with Modern Warfare 2. And really, you know, the long-term strategy is to keep all of our valuable, you know, clan members, our friends, our gunslingers around, so that when Reach falls, everyone's still there, still ready to, you know, tackle the next challenge. And, you know, if they're becoming more adaptable as gamers, we're going to have less attrition, because if what Bungie says ends up being true, Halo Reach is going to feel a lot different than Halo 3. So, you know, if you want a clan that's going to sustain any type of momentum, you need to make sure that your people are adaptable enough to roll with the punches and embrace change and play games that are new and exciting and might not feel, you know, exactly like that comfy old blanket that they're used to sleeping with every night.
Okay, very nice. Yeah, we had a little Reach episode last week, and I'll ask for your guys' opinions later at the end. But let's go ahead and move on to the Call of Duty Halo roundtable, since we're kind of on that topic anyway. So, I guess back when Gears of War came out, it was Gears versus Halo, and now it's kind of evolved to Call of Duty versus Halo, where you have all the Halo lovers kind of riding out on the Call of Duty series, and then kind of vice versa for some of the hardcore fans, and then you have the casual fans that just kind of go with the newer game. So this is just kind of open discussion if someone wants to talk about a certain feature of a game or a certain topic that involves both games. Feel free to speak up at any point in time. I'm going to go ahead and start off with a little something, just kind of what you guys think are the biggest differences that really place Halo and Call of Duty apart. And we'll start with Brent, since he hasn't talked much yet.
All right. Obviously, other than just, you know, the pure gameplay mechanics, the thing that really sets Halo apart, for me at least, was the feeling that it just seemed like there was less ability to do I don't want to say cheatist stuff, because it's not really cheating if it, you know, falls in line with proper game mechanics. But just like stuff like the twin akimbo shotguns and stuff, running around with that. Like, that seems like a, you know, kind of cheaterish thing to do. Like, I played Modern Warfare 2 for a very short period of time. I didn't play it hardcore. I didn't get into the hardcore matches, which are undoubtedly probably better. But there are definitely people out there that take advantage of game mechanics that
you know, put them head and shoulders above people that aren't using those mechanics. Like last night I was playing with Daftlink, and people are just rocketing at us, like, constantly. And I'm sure that if we played, you know, long enough and we had a good enough team, there are ways to counter that rocket. But it just frustrates me when, you know, I go into a game with, you know, me and three guys I know and then some stragglers, and, you know, every time I spawn, 3 seconds later, I'm getting hit in the head with a rocket launcher. You know, and if when I'm not getting hit in the head with a rocket launcher, I'm stepping into a claymore or something. Like, it's just the feeling I get that when I play Halo, I can survive for longer than, you know, 3 seconds at any given time. And that when I do survive, my time on the battlefield actually has some sort of meaning. Like, I'm actually accomplishing something during those, you know, 30 seconds to a minute that I might stay alive in Halo.
Interesting.
Well, I kind of disagree with that. Let's see. First of all, you were talking about the dual Akimbo shotguns, and I think probably you're talking specifically about the Akimbo 1887s, where code of the game, there was like a major problem with that, because once people unlocked that and got those dual 1887s, they had way too much range. It wasn't necessarily unrealistic as much as it was unfair. In comparison with the rest of the weapons. What they did on that is they actually nerfed it down to where the dual Akimbos do the same damage as one 1887. So they've already come out with the update to address that. There is a lot more going on, obviously way more crazy stuff going on in Modern Warfare 2. But unless you're talking about hacking, where unfortunately that is kind of a problem right now that is being worked on in some different ways, where they have matches showing up where people can jump 100 feet in the air and fire like super fast RPGs at just one right after the other and do all kinds of crazy stuff. It's just a problem with hacking. It's like it was in Halo 2 for a time. And it sucks. Yeah, I wish... they didn't have that problem right now, but at least we know they're working on it, and eventually it's going to be, that's going to be addressed. But, like, as far as the main game, I don't know that you should necessarily be getting hit all the time with rockets. That makes me think that you're in a match that might be hacked or something.
Get griefed by his opponents. I think some of that comes with experience from the game. I mean, if you were to go into Halo 3 with a team with some of your buddies and you all know what's up, if you get both those warthogs and you're just driving that figure eight of death around those two bases and you're playing a bunch of guys who got this game for Christmas, they're going to say, Halo's a nightmare. Every time I spawned, these cars would drive by and they would shoot me, and I didn't accomplish anything. So I think, you know, to hear you say that you played Modern Warfare 2 for a short period of time, it's an unforgiving game, and it takes a long time to find out where all the dangerous nooks and crannies are. But to, you know, Brent's original point about cheating, I got to agree with Fumo. Modern Warfare 2 is the Wild West as much as Halo 2 ever was. I mean, if you remember flying warthogs, you know.
Rockets that shot trains.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Yeah, I remember what Halo 2. I mean, I should probably, you know, preface my comments by saying that I indeed do suck at video games. And, no. You know, I did not, like, I played Modern Warfare 2 for a very short period of time. Like, I loved the original Modern Warfare. And that's why I thought that I would love Modern Warfare 2 more than I did. But with Modern Warfare 1, I think it was just the novel experience of, you know, leveling up and that kind of, you know, just, you know, a couple more experience points and then I get this next weapon, you know, at the time was... You know, they didn't really have that, you know, the FPS genre on the consoles at the time. So, I mean, that the kind of MMO progression mentality kept me coming for the original Modern Warfare. And then, you know, going into Modern Warfare 2, that novelty, you know, it wasn't new. So, I mean, I started playing and, you know, I don't know, it didn't catch on with me. So I didn't play long enough to actually, you know, I suppose get good enough at the game to counter stuff like, you know, the people that are, you know, setting up good enough that they can, you know, just rocket me in the face constantly. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure that if I played with a good enough team, we probably could have countered that and set up, you know, just as easily as they did for, you know, domination. Yeah. But,
you know, another thing I think with that, too, is that, you know how on Halo, 3 and Halo 2 for that matter, when you're playing at low levels, it's kind of deceptive because matchmaking around maybe the 20s is pretty accurate. You got people that have earned their way up to 20. They haven't earned their way past it yet. So you got people playing at it, you know, 20 versus 20 kind of thing. However, like matchmaking on level 1, people could be starting new accounts. They could have come over from the previous game, but they just hadn't got into it yet, but they were really good, et cetera, et cetera. So you got people that are really good and people that are really bad and people that are everywhere in between. Even though matchmaking is still there, it hasn't really, you know, assessed what their true skill level is yet. And it hasn't gotten them to a happy medium where they're hovering around that their real skill level. So early on, the same thing applies to Modern Warfare 1 and 2. Early on, you're going to get people that are just running around like crazy lone wolves, and you're going to get people that are extremely good, and some people that are extremely good in there as a team that are just wiping everybody out. And yeah, that's bound to frustrate people for sure. But you were talking about the MMO type progression, and I understand how that's not as new as it was in Modern Warfare 1, but at least they added enough to it in a relatively realistic manner. Not nearly as realistic as it was in Modern Warfare 1, but you know, in a believable sort of manner that makes it just there's a constant progression. There's constantly something that you're more that you're unlocking, and there's just so much to it that you can unlock. So, I mean, to me, that was overcome by that, is that there's constantly, you know, there's so many guns, there's so many different, there's the level ups for all of your perks and everything else. There's all the different kill streaks and death streaks and everything else. So, I don't know, that overcame that problem for me.
Okay.
Yeah, what you got to remember is that Halo is like, it's 2.5 years old now. So, I mean, the people who have been playing it, and probably are still playing it, know basically everything that's going to happen. I mean, Modern Warfare 2 is only just over 3 months old, so people are still learning, like, the ins and outs, like, all the hiding spots, like, all the best moves that they can make. So I think it's going to be a while before people start really figuring out how to play Modern Warfare 2 to make the game not fun for the other team. Whereas Halo, if you go up against like a team who know what they're doing, it will make your life, as you said, just miserable. So I think at the moment, Modern Warfare 2 has that edge that you still have so many people who don't know what they're doing. And if you do know, have an idea of what you're doing, you can have a bit more fun.
On the other side of that, though, Halo, by design, tends to give everyone a fair shot. You know, anybody who knows where that Spartan laser is and they, you know, blitz into the center of the map at the top of a match can get that power weapon and give their team an advantage. Whereas a new group of new people playing a Call of Duty game are like lambs to the slaughter. I've seen, you know, I've gone into a game with people on my team who are on their third or fourth prestige, you know, to say that they've gone through the ranking system 3 or 4 times already in playing Call of Duty. We go up against people that have chevrons as their rank indicator, meaning they're really low level, you know, and these poor guys are just, you know, they're helpless. They don't have the perks they need. They don't have all the special attachments on their guns that make them more effective. And they're going up against people that have, you know, AC-130 Spectre gunships enabled in their killstreak rewards, and they know how to get them. So Call of Duty can be very cruel to the new person because the team that gets a leg up on the other team is rewarded with the toys that they need to just really run up the score and rub the other team's faces into it. And then it gets to the point where you're just nuking these poor bastards and it's game over.
Well, that's true, but then at least they don't unlock, like, for instance, a C-130 like right when you spawn or anything like that. Even all of the stuff that you unlock, you still have to work for. So they still have to be good enough to get enough kills in a row to be able to get the C-130 going. Well, so at least there's that balance going on.
I'm no good at Modern Warfare 2. I'm good at fielding a team, but I'm not all that good at it myself, and all my AC-130s come off of a 4-kill streak where I get a care package that's lucky. I mean, I just sit there rolling the dice in the back of the map, and when that AC-130 shows up, I'm just like, hello, gorgeous, and I go for my I call it my pony ride. I want a pony ride! I go for my pony ride, and hopefully I get some... You know, it's like, all right, back into my corner with my ACR and my red dot because I can't aim through iron sights, but...
My biggest complaint about Modern Warfare 2 is all the camping. Like, they offer all these awesome killstreak stuff, but, like, it's just so easy to obtain. Like, I have a 3-point-something KPD in Modern Warfare 2, mainly because I just camp, because I know that's the best strategy to get the most kills and win the game. And, like, I haven't played Modern Warfare 2 since the week it came out, because it's just lost its fun. It's just all camping. It's, I mean, the goal is to get kills, and the best way to get kills is to camp. And I just, there's just no fun in that.
So, from the discussions, would you guys say Halo 3 seems to be more balanced in terms of giving the little man and giving the higher up man kind of a balance
towards
each other? Or, sorry, go ahead.
Well, first of all, let's take skill progression out of the equation. Let's assume that everybody has the same stuff, because that's obviously right. It's not balanced, you know.
Right.
Like, let's say Modern Warfare 2, everybody starts with the same weapons, you know, and is able to do it that way.
Okay. So from there,
that's not the way it works.
It's not, but if it were in a tournament, I imagine it wouldn't go by, you know, all your unlocks would be there. Like in MLG, right. I don't know how they do it for sure, but I'm pretty darn sure they wouldn't, you know, just allow everybody to bring in all their unlocks.
Well, you know, we don't need to. We can get into that if we want, but when I look at MLG, I look at a group that takes all my favorite stuff out of the games I like to play. I'll watch an MLG tournament the day that a Warthog gets fielded, you know? So, I mean, if MLG wants to have, you know, a battle rifle competition where everybody's exactly the same and shoot the same gun, that's just, it bores me to tears. But,
I agree.
You know, Modern Warfare 2 is far less balanced in terms of everyone having a fair shot. You know, the guy who has played the game the longest, and the guy who has held on to his full arsenal of weapons, the guy that steps onto the battlefield with a tactical insertion flare and a digicamo Barrett 50 caliber sniper rifle and a thermal scope and an Arctic ghillie suit is probably going to beat to submission the guy who's got the stock a submachine gun and, you know, no perks.
Right. So it kind of seems to me that Halo 3 is by nature a little more balanced in terms of bringing down the higher up players to kind of down the level and bringing the noob players, so to speak, kind of up to a more balanced playing field than Call of Duty has.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it seems like.
That seems to be Bungie's design aesthetic. They want that.
Go ahead, Jack.
Well, in rank matches, I would have to agree with that. But, you know, if you go into a social match, you could have a team of, like, level 10s, and legitimate level 10s, and we'll go up against a team of generals. And I don't see how Bungie worked that out. Whereas in Modern Warfare 2, the point is, if you go in on your own and you have prestiged, you should only match up against other people who have prestiged. That's why you find so many people who stay at level 70 in the first prestige, because they get easier opponents. So I can agree with the ranked matchmaking, but the social matchmaking of Halo, I think it's just random how they match you up.
Yeah.
And to add to this, I know that it's easier on new people in Halo, but it's more balanced because it's a simpler system. But also, you got to think of the goals are different. In Halo, your goal is to level up. You know, and to do the best you can and to win every match. In Modern Warfare, it's not necessarily the case. And it was the same with Modern Warfare 1. You know, your goal is sure to win, but if you don't win, it's okay because you have other goals, such as, you know, going towards things in the barracks, such as unlocking different weapons, such as, all the different challenges. You know, there's a lot you can still accomplish even if you don't win. Even if you do terrible, there's a lot you can still make progress towards. So that's one thing I really like about Modern Warfare, is that you can, even when you don't win, you can still have a good time. Like you won't be like, oh, that's so frustrating. I you know, lost that really badly and stuff. Even if you lose really badly, it's like, well, you know, I got a couple miles towards the marathon, something like that.
Okay.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's whether you play the game to get better at the game or whether you play the game to have fun. And the people who play the game to have fun don't care if they win or lose. They just play it because they just have nothing better to do and they have a great time, usually with friends off Xbox Live. Right. But you get people in Halo at the moment who only play the game to get better. To be honest, like myself, because I'm a big MLG player, both of Halo and of Call of Duty 4. So, and I think it's only going to be a matter of time before they bring Modern Warfare 2 into the MLG circuit. And when you were saying, like, it's going to be to do with unlocks, I know from previous experiences that they are going to just keep the weapon set the same, and you'll only have to have a certain number of perks allowed. So then it's more of a who is the better player.
Right.
Okay.
And I can understand why people don't like that, because it does take the fun out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of like ruins the ethos of Modern Warfare, that kind of customizability, the kind of what Fumo was, you know, talking about, where, you know, even if you don't win, you get that progression, you know, that your personal challenges completed.
I think on the tournament level, they put fun on the back burner. The primary goal is to win and see who's the best, and fun is just an afterthought. They're just trying to make it as equal and as balanced as possible, so the best is actually the best.
It's true. At least for people that are more oriented towards that, towards just raw skill comparison, that there is that MLG style setting in or
boop that out there.
I think we lost him.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Back to the light.
But you get the kind of feeling with Modern Warfare 2 at the end is everyone's a winner. Which is kind of great. It's just like, yeah, I don't care. Losers. I don't care that we lost. I progressed up some ranks. Great.
Yeah.
And I had fun.
I've talked to
I think that's
Halo
the one
fans.
Big difference Modern Warfare 2 has.
Yeah, a lot of Halo.
Well, you're talking to guy. You're talking to a guy from one.
A lot of the Halo clans that I know that have come over to Modern Warfare 2 have expressed a lot of frustration with that too, because they're used to playing in an environment where, in order for anyone to rank up or gain XP, the whole team has to win. And when these competitive Halo teams come over to Modern Warfare 2, and the next thing you know, people aren't really playing for the team win, they're over in the corner trying to get a knife throw kill, a throwing knife kill, so they can put a new emblem on their gamer tag or something like that. You know, a lot of times these people have been frustrated. You know, like, this game is ruining my clan. We used to be a competitive crew. We used to go in and we used to work together, and now I got this idiot over here trying to make a kill using a sniper rifle with a short-range scope on the top of it because he wants to unlock another attachment. And that's one of the reasons why I refuse to prestige in Modern Warfare 2, is because the game makes you do weird stuff. You know, and a lot of people, and I'm sure they're right, a lot of people will say that that makes you better at the game. You know, the more things you try, the more you challenge yourself, the more you force yourself to play outside of your comfort zone, you know, it's going to make you better, it's going to expand your bag of tricks, but it's really distracting for me to play a game, and all of a sudden they say, you know, put this, you know, advanced combat optical gun sight on your rifle and get a bunch of kills with that, and then we'll give you more toys to play with. It's like, I would never use this in this circumstances. I would never use this weapon attachment in this scenario, but I'm going to because the game wants me to. And, you know, people just don't always bring their A game. Sometimes they bring their I'm experimenting game. And, you know, that for clans that like their players to play their very best game every single time, that, you know, tends to kind of piss them off.
Okay. Very interesting. Well, does anyone else have a topic? Because I can bring up another one.
Community.
Okay.
Bring up.
Yeah. Okay. Jack, why don't you start? I guess you kind of addressed that a little bit. You want to kind of continue on what you were talking about? I know you have to leave here in a little bit. So unless there's something you want to address specifically.
I'm okay to say I'm a little bit more.
Okay.
Well, I mean, when you say community, I mean, like, what exactly do you mean by that? Do you mean, like, the general consensus of how people look at Modern Warfare 2 and Halo 3, or just, like, how that what they're like. Are they a nice group of people?
Well, more than anything, I mean the support that you get from the developer. Being a player of Halo, you know who Bungie.net is, you know who Urk is, you know who Hot-tacular is, you know who the Praetoria Guard is, you know who the MLG circuit is. There's a real sense of participating as a member of a scene, and everybody has their own screenshots, and you can see their montages, and the people who make the game, if you go to their site, they're always introducing you to someone else that plays your game and is using it to do interesting stuff. That is gone from Call of Duty. It's not gone, but it's very challenged.
I don't know any Call of Duty groups like there is Podtacular. Like, where is Codtacular? I haven't seen any niche groups built around Call of Duty like Podtacular has around Halo.
Well, they're out there. I mean, there's a group called the Sea Snipers. They're a cool group of guys. They used to develop strategy guides for the developers. So, they're really in good with the guys that make the game. They're at seasnipers.net. They run their own private league that has a lot of the same rules that you'll find in an MLG setting. There's any number of Call of Duty clans, but there isn't that sense of all of them inhabiting the same space. There is no Call of Duty nation. There's just sort of other people that play Call of Duty. If the TTL gunslingers arrive at some other clan site, people that play Halo and we introduce ourselves, they would probably say, great, let's have a challenge. Let's get acquainted. We'll send some captains over to your forum boards and we'll, make friends. We tried that approach. We did a little diplomacy blitz when Modern Warfare 2 was coming out. And we showed up at this one clan site, and they were devoted to Call of Duty, and I won't say their name. I will enable them to remain nameless, but literally in showing up and saying, hey, we're from Tide the Leader, and we're the Gunslingers, and we want to be friends with you, and here's a link to our site, and here's our forum, and we have a blog. Maybe you'll be entertained by this. We got banned from their site for advertising. They banned us from their site because we were advertising our own clan. And I guess they thought that we were showing up to recruit their people or something like that. And it was just like the weirdest thing. It was like we didn't show up and say, we're going to kick your ass. So we didn't, puff out our chests or anything. We just showed up and said, hey, anybody want to play some games? You want to have a challenge? The way we've done dozens of times, the way we've done so many times with other Halo clans. We show up and we get, just to make friends with these guys. And it's the first time I've ever been banned from another website just for showing up and being like, hey, fellas, get out of here.
I think the community aspect has a lot to do with the whole point of Halo versus the whole point of Modern Warfare and Call of Duty, for that matter, is that, Halo's a competitive game. You're playing to do better. You're playing to win. If you don't win, then you didn't make any progression. So, kind of like, I think a good comparison here is to compare to something like Mass Effect 2. You don't see giant Mass Effect 2 communities. Granted, Mass Effect 2 does not have a multiplayer component, so it's kind of, stilted there. But still, it's, I think the point here is that, is a comparison between teamwork. You have, with Halo 3 and for Halo 2 for that matter, and Halo 1, it's all about teamwork. Teams that work together, that communicate, that focus multiple points of fire on one location, can do better and can win more games, and ultimately, they can go into much more competitive levels. In Modern Warfare 2 and 1 to a lesser extent, it's not so much like that. I mean, you can work together, but can be in completely different parts of the map. You're really just being kind of a lone wolf and still accomplishing what's, the goals of whatever game type that you're doing. Because of all the different perks, because of the things like the crazy C-130 and some of the different perks where you can, the kill streaks, the UAV,
drop a missile,
all that stuff like that. I mean, come on, you're a one-man army over there. What do you need the rest of your team for? So I think whole concept kind of lends itself less to teamwork and therefore less to kind of a community of people that want to work together to accomplish something.
Cool. Just want to point out, Greg is now joining us. So, hi, Greg.
Hello.
Hey.
Sorry, I was late. I was out with the lady friend, and we were having a good time.
Lady friend?
You're a gamer and you have a girlfriend?
Hey, Sean, not, Fumo has a wife. It's even more amazing.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, that's a little further than Greg.
Yeah. Anywho,
I think we need an introduction. Let's bring them in here.
That was an introduction.
Now, what do you ladies think? Call of Duty or Halo? What do you think?
What do you guys think? Huh? Why don't you forget to head over there? What do you think? Just kidding. Brent, is that bringing back bad memories?
It is bringing back terrible memories.
Anywho, what were we talking about before Call of Duty? Before I jumped in?
We're talking about the Civil
War.
There's
teamwork in Call of Duty? I didn't know there was teamwork.
There it is.
Yeah.
I thought it was just you just grabbed a gun.
That basically just sums it up, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess, no, you camp over here. You camp over here. I'm going to camp right here. That's the teamwork.
We know what Greg thinks about Modern Warfare 2 now.
I'm just kidding. It's okay.
No, you're not.
I mean, I like to run and gun, and I do pretty good, but it's pretty easy to get behind people because it's pretty much understandable to where they're going to camp at. So, I mean, if you play long enough, people always camp in the same spots. So you can just watch out for those spots, and then you know where they can't see, so just shoot them from there. It's pretty easy.
We don't call that camping at Tide the Leader. We call it using cover or defending a fixed position.
There you go.
Setting up a crossfire.
There are two different types.
Strategy.
There are two different types of a...
Gotta have the
PCs.
Well,
yeah, there is a difference between camping. There is a difference between camping and camping. Because, I mean, there's people who just sit in one corner for the whole of the game holding the model akimbos.
Destiny.
Who just, as soon as you come around the corner, bam, you're dead. But the point is, there are people who use the sniper who hide behind a rock, poke their nose out, shoot you, they'll hide behind the rock, but then they'll go hide behind another rock.
That's legitimate camping, because that's kind of how a sniper
that's
works.
A
sniper. Yeah, fine.
Yeah.
You pick a place, and you snipe from there. You're supposed to be hidden, but like if you camp a corner with a shotgun for the entire game where people just run in like through a door, that's...
I'm trying to figure out where you how you know snipers do what they do, Dusty. We've seen a second... Like secret life.
Oh, shush!
That we don't even know.
The secret life.
The secret life of Dustin Pettigrew.
It's good. It's gonna be a book.
I've that movie.
I haven't played Modern Warfare 2 because I refuse to buy it.
Oh,
he's recording from his cubby hole.
So he also will not buy Command and Conquer 4 because of the same reason.
Yeah.
Halo player by day, Modern Warfare sniper by night.
Dustin Pettigrew.
The main reason, like a lot of people know, I didn't get Modern Warfare 2 because of the lack of dedicated server for the PC.
It's really because you couldn't afford it.
I hear you there.
Mm. You know about camping, though, in Modern Warfare? And
really
I understand where you guys are coming from on that, because I think the reason that camping is so prolific in Modern Warfare is because you have these gigantic maps with tons of cubby holes everywhere. I mean, the maps are way, 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 way more complex than Halo's ever were by many orders of difference. But there's two ways to combat that. The first is a kill cam, so you can see right where everybody kills you from every time, generally. And the second is the the white hot scope that
thermal.
The thermal scope. So I mean, you can look right through through different obstacles and stuff and see people show up. That's actually like a perfect tool against campers.
That would be very useful in real life.
Mm. They have it.
Well, they got infrared in real life.
Yeah, everything that you find in Modern Warfare 2. For the most part, I mean, there are certain game conventions like cold blooded. You know what's that? You can't inject yourself with ice water, but you know, the devices, the weapons, the kill streak rewards, you know, we have motion sensing sentry guns. They don't tend to know good guys from bad guys the way they do in Modern Warfare 2, but when you're playing Halo, you're a 7 foot tall tank. Okay? There isn't gonna be any hiding. There isn't a whole lot of stealth in Halo. It's rock and roll. It's
There is.
Run and gun.
I mean, I mean, if you pay attention to, I mean, like, you can watch MLG on a whole, but if you watch it closely, there's a lot of sneaking around.
Yeah, there's crouch walking and stuff like that, but there aren't a lot of hiding places, you know? It's like...
Like, if someone walked by you, they're going to see you.
Not always. Yeah, this is Dustin, and he's...
There's no pro in Halo.
Let's just say there's no ghillie suits in Halo yet, but...
that might change.
I guess you'd never heard of HLG.
HLG.
There's tons of hiding spaces.
Jeez.
It's just not polite to use them, but people do. They do use them, and it becomes incredibly infuriating.
I think the complex maps, though, with all the different hiding spaces and the possibility for camping, but then the counters to those possibilities, I think it makes it all the much more interesting in general, you know, because there's so much more to these maps than there is in any of the Halo maps. And they're both by design. Halo are designed to be simpler maps so that they're more competitive. You know, Call of Duty's designed to be bigger and have lots of cubby holes, but then have lots of different angles to those cubby holes and different ways of, you know, penetrating someone that's camping there so they're not just like a one-man fortress that nobody can get into.
Sure.
You know, so it makes it more interesting. It makes it more factors to the game. So.
If some guy wants to camp in the kitchen with a shotgun, I have a grenade launcher.
So you're trying to say you have to be more methodical to Modern Warfare? You have to be more adrenaline junkie to play Halo? Is that
yeah. We say, at Tide the Leader, we say that playing Modern Warfare 2, or playing Call of Duty for that matter, because we played a lot of World at War, playing Call of Duty is like playing chess. Playing Halo is like boxing with your hair on fire.
I completely saw it the opposite way, honestly. I mean, I don't know. Like, when I play Modern Warfare, I just grab a gun that's pretty accurate and just run. And I'll go, like, 40 and 2. But in Halo, I'll just, I don't know, I will most of the time go positive. And I think a lot more when I do go positive rather than just do that. I just find Modern Warfare to be a lot more easy.
I agree with that. I think Modern Warfare requires a little long-term strategy. Like, you know the general area on the map. You have to think, where's the best place to shoot them from? What can I shoot them with? While Halo, you're just running around. It's short-term strategy. You see a guy, and in a couple seconds, you got to think, okay, what can I do to take him out?
I need the biggest gun possible.
The other thing is, when I'm playing Modern Warfare 2 or Call of Duty World at War, or even, you know, the original Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, I'm not playing Team Deathmatch or Capture the Flag as much as, well, I'm hoping to be playing Hardcore Search and Destroy. And for anybody who hasn't played that game, think one bomb with SWAT settings and you get one life per round. So if you're running around with an unsilenced weapon and you're not cold-blooded and you're just, you know, shooting anything that moves, you're going to get...
Cold-blooded.
There's no running around in that game type. It's like, oh my gosh, I got to get to a room quick.
Yeah. you are on the creep. You're popping smoke. You're moving cover to cover.
But then it's more tactical. And I mean, personally, I love Search and Destroy. I think that's my favorite game type. Because of the use your brain to play it.
Yeah.
But it also seems like...
Maybe I'm alone on that one.
From
I don't know how to use my brain.
It's just tough, though. It's super tough. I have trouble getting into that because I get so frustrated because, you know, you got to check every angle. And even if you do, you could miss one easy.
Sure.
You got to check every possible place you could get shot from. And,
yeah. Ain't war hell.
Well, and then there's the fact for Call of Duty that there's more players in... Well, I don't know. How many players can you have on Xbox? I know for PC, for Call of Duty, you can have up to 32 players in a game.
16.
Plus.
God.
18.
Maximum. With ground war.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's
18. It's the same.
Yeah.
Throw the dart at the board.
Okay. So it's more than even Big Team was on, you know, on Halo 2 or on Halo 3.
Right.
That means on average you're playing with more people in a Call of Duty match than you are with Halo.
It depends on what game type you go into. Because if you go into the ground war, then yes, you'll always be playing with usually a maxed out, you know, room. But if you go into, you can go into some of the smaller ones, and it, you know, maxes it out at 4v4 and stuff like that. So
okay.
It really depends on how you play it. Just, you know, it's the same type of thing with old playlists with Big Team versus Team Slayer and stuff like that, same concept.
If I can go back a little bit, when we were talking about community, Dusty brought up the whole thing where they're not supporting servers on PC. That's kind of like a betrayal, because Call of Duty started on the PC. You have Call of Duty 1 and 2 were all big PC games, and it's kind of like a stab in the back for their early supporters by like kind of limiting the game that on the device that started them, and they've just seemed to become more of a profit company than a for the customer company.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
It certainly is a business.
The majority of people who are buying games are Xbox and consoles right now. I mean, for a majority, like if you want to make a majority, you just make it for the teenage boy. Who honestly, it's what 32-year-old guys from 16-year-old guys want to play. Even like 10-year-olds if they want, like 10 to 40. If you just make one for like an 18-year-old, 10 to 40 is pretty much who's going to buy it, and pretty much all of them. That's, I mean, they're doing a good job.
No, the average age of a gamer is 33 years old, though. The average age of a gamer is 33 years old.
You mean like, okay, is this a purchaser or is this a player?
This is a player. This is, you know, that's the target.
Yeah, average brand. Player.
So do they count like Farmville and everything?
Like console.
I can personally attest.
It would be older if it was Farmville. The average Farmville user is 43.
Yeah. I can tell you, every person I know over 30 is playing Farmville that I know. I can tell you that right now.
Dude, Pogo.com is like internet geriatric ward. For real, it's like 65-year-old, you know, women playing Scrabble online. Like, yeah, if they're including, you know, all of those people on people that game, you know, the statistic, yeah, they kind of ruin the curve, but.
I don't really see 30, 34 as a really.
I can. I mean, look at the big game.
I guess you could
say that. SNES and Pong, the first gamers, that was a long time ago. I think a lot of those people are still going to be playing games today, and they're going to be a lot older audience.
I think probably the reason you don't. I think probably the reason you don't see that as a average is that the people you hear are the annoying kids yelling through their mics. You don't hear a lot of people saying, like, adults saying stuff when there's nothing to say. You know, they don't have to be constantly talking. Sure. So I think that's the difference, is you got immature kids that are just like singing some ridiculous song or just, you know, you know, just cursing at somebody for no reason just to get a reaction because they're kids.
The vocal, the vocal.
You're dumb, you stupid little guy. I'm gonna talk.
I mean, it'd be
you go to a movie and
it'd be kind of weird to hear a 75-year-old man shouting down the mic. Shut up, you stupid kid!
Get off my lawn, boy!
Get off my thing! Vietnam, and that this is not how the war was fought.
that would be very interesting.
That's going to be JVP in 20 years. Get off.
That's how we roll in Green Farms Retirement Village.
What if you walked into like a retirement home and they're like, you going to get on Call of Duty tonight? Oh, yeah, you know, Gerald, I'm going to be on.
That's how it's going to be in like 50 years when all these like 18 and 20-year-old people are finally, you know, heading into retirement homes. It's going to be like, noob, we're going to play some old school Halo 3 tonight. You in? He's like, you still have a working Xbox?
It's a $30 buy-in if you get in the game.
When I was your age, we had to use our hands to play video games.
There are really old people that play video games. There's a documentary or not.
Yeah, there is.
There's like this 75-year-old woman playing Halo 2 online.
Yes.
And she like got into it while she was recovering in the hospital from something. I thought that's just really weird. 75-year-old grandma playing Halo 2 against all these kids.
That's awesome.
She's supposedly pretty good.
What's wrong with her?
Hasn't tried to like sue her yet or something.
She's pouting.
She's the grandma from the MLG Pony Grandma commercials.
That'd be interesting to see, like, how many senior citizens actually play like first-person shooter games.
I don't know. Have you ever like walked into Best Buy and looked at the games going, I don't know who in the hell would buy that? You ever like seen those?
Yeah.
Of course.
Like shovelware?
Yeah, people, a lot
there's
of old
there's
people.
A game called Secret Service.
There's a lot of old people that like there's like hide and seek games on the Xbox,
yeah.
Or like mystery games. Old people buy the crap out of that. It's like one of our most sold games at our store. It's ridiculous. I'm like, oh, wouldn't you just like rather have game. Like Forza or something? It's like, simple. No, I want to.
Another thing I just thought of. The average gamer is around 35. Remember all the casual gamers? Look how much the Wii sold. How many teenagers and stuff do you think are the Wii compared to adults playing the Wii?
I know I have a Wii and I don't play it.
Well,
so
that's probably the balance out for that group. There's probably a lot more younger players play the Xbox than you have your family.
You're way more hardcore like, young people then.
Do you think more old people are playing Halo or more old people are playing
probably
Call of Duty? I mean, do you think they're playing Halo or Call of Duty?
okay, so bringing it back.
Oh, old people, yeah. Well, I think that they can actually use Xbox Live as an extension of Life Alert. Think about it. Like, what if you fell down, and what if an old person could like reach their mic, and they'll be like, "I'm falling and I can't get up." Like, what if
some little kid be like, "You dumb noob, get up, you dumb noob, teabag you, you dumb noob."
For you hold the guide button for the 3 seconds, and
jump
then
and drive the hog.
Then he calls 911 if you hold the guide button for a long time.
Oh yeah.
For 10 seconds.
I'm trying to put my camera down, and the police keep showing up.
All citizens should have Life Alert. I don't know.
That should be under...
Is that a special button on your controller that has 911?
That should be under Life Alert's like main slogan is gamer just standing there going, all old people need this. If you are old and you know who you are.
Yeah, it's like Surgeon General Michael Brent Horsley. All senior citizens should have Life Alert.
No, Sergeant Brent Horsley, meter maid.
Oh, yeah. Certified meter maid, Michael Brent Horsley.
Says,
I'm like standing there like putting a citation on someone's car and I just look into the camera, tell people they need Life Alert.
You give them the whole Johnny Bravo look. Sunglasses.
The concept of
on Xbox Live
Call of Duty is hilarious though, but it's cool, and I wish that more old people would do it.
Okay, have you guys talked about the campaigns of either of them?
Ah, good question.
That is a good question.
No, we haven't talked about either one of those yet. I don't know. Personally, I thought Halo 3 campaign was a little.
You didn't play the first Call of Duty. How do you know?
Did you play Modern Warfare 2?
Well, I'm just saying in general. I didn't think Halo 3's campaign was.
I think the McDouble is a horrible product.
And it's not specifically Halo 3 and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. It's just the Halo franchise versus the Call of Duty franchise.
I think Modern Warfare 1 was a good campaign. I don't think it was.
I like the Modern Warfare 1 campaign.
I don't like the Modern Warfare 2 campaign at all.
I mean, I came into Call of Duty at Modern Warfare 1 and it really just blew my mind how like all these like mini missions, like you have the mission of a guy just sniping one person, the mission of your dead guy just crawling and then dying. You know, I'd never gone through like the whole of my gaming life to see these missions before, so it kind of like opened my eyes. And to be honest, I know people say why, but Modern Warfare 2 is actually my favorite campaign of all games I've ever played.
Really?
Not saying I'm bad mouthing Halo here, but it is my favorite campaign.
I'd say Modern Warfare 1 is my favorite campaign I've ever played, but Modern Warfare 2.
Wait, ever? Ever?
Yeah, absolutely ever. Yeah.
Oh boy, you need to play some.
I think I've played kind of a lot of games too.
It's like Mass Effect.
I still pull the original Halo. Probably has one of the best campaigns.
Assassin's Creed. I mean, come on.
Oh yeah.
Imagine Babies.
Yeah.
Barbie.
Bob and Horse Adventures.
Agent Party Babies.
Naruto. Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
My
Naruto,
Sims. Agents. I mean, come on, dude.
Portal.
Dragon Ball Z. Raging Blast or whatever.
Raymond's rabbit butt bouncing game. What about Feel the Magic or Lapras? Come on.
You still remember that?
Yeah.
Lapras DS, whatever. Wow.
Anyway, we don't need to talk about that.
No, we don't, but.
Viva Pinata.
There we go.
Chucky
was playing that last night. I sent him a message and then laughed at him.
Man, part where the nuclear bomb went off and you're like kind of stumbling around as a pinata horse.
Your fudge hog is like dying of radiation poisoning, like he's trying to crawl out of the garden. It's great.
I was crying against something in my eyes, that part.
Like fudge is like oozing out of him.
Well, what do you guys think overall is the best, let's just say overall gameplay? Don't even worry about story, but gameplay.
Well, the story kind of matters.
Okay, yeah, that's not... Well, I think I hated the Halo 3 story, just put that out there, but I think that gameplay between the two Halo 3 was better. I hated the story, though.
I think Duststorm kind of agrees with you, too.
I hated both the stories, I guess.
I didn't hate Halo 3's story, but I didn't think it was great. The problem I had with Modern Warfare 2 is that it tried to do like way too many of the kind of crazy twist moments that are shocking, you know, from the first one. It had legitimately shocking events, like when the nuke goes off, you know, when that happened the first time, I was like, oh man, that's crazy. Or like at the start of the game when you're like the dictator that, you know, getting assassinated.
Yep.
It's like, oh man, like that's crazy. You know, but then in Modern Warfare 2, it's like they're trying to figure out how to ratchet it up, and they're like, all right, let's like do it, but instead of like doing it, you know, once or twice, let's do it like five or six times. It's gonna be great. Like parts of Modern Warfare 2's story, I also didn't like. It gives you no like exposition as to what's happening. Like at some parts of the game, stuff just happens, and they never explain like why it's happening or give you any clue as to what's happening. And, like, you don't understand until, like, later after you've, like, thought about it for a second. And you're like, oh, maybe that's what Woody is doing, you know? But even then, like, you're not for sure. And then you, like, talk about it with your friends, and you still can't come to a consensus. Like, when, I think it's fair to you know, give out spoilers at this point.
It's kind of like watching The Bachelor. You never know who
they're going to get. Is the statute of limitations out on Modern Warfare 2, story-wise?
I believe it is. I believe we can.
I mean, it's a pretty short campaign anyway.
Phyllis dies in the first 5 minutes of Sixth Sense. Go ahead and rip it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like when what's his name? Price. When he activates, you know, when he launches the nukes out of the submarine, you're like, what? He's like, oh,
yeah, that
this
blew
is
my mind.
He's like, I'm activating the nukes, and you're like, what? And you just see these nukes like fly off into the distance, and like, you're like, what happened? And then like later on in the story, like you think about it for a second, you're like, oh yeah, he was trying to help out the Americans by setting off the nuke in midair, so it would send off the EMP blast, so that it would destroy all the airplanes in the area, and all the, you know, helicopters would fall out of the sky, and, you know, kill a bunch of Americans, but we'd still have enough power to, you know, rush the White House and, you know, take it back, so that they wouldn't, you know, nuke it. And you're like, oh yeah. But it's just the fact that they gave no exposition as to that. Like, I literally had to sit there for, like, 15 minutes after the game and just try to, like, reconcile all of my thoughts and try to figure out, you know, what exactly happened.
What happened was...
You know, I totally agree with you, and I think this has kind of been thrown around a lot on the internet, and I can totally agree with it and understand it. I still think it was a great campaign, though. Even despite all the flaws, there's plot holes, there's kind of reaches. They are constantly throwing in those oh my gosh moments. That's crazy. I can't believe that just happened. But nonetheless, but it's like nonetheless, I really still thought it was a really exciting and fun campaign and an interesting story with a good twist, and it was still complex enough and at least in the realm of modern life, if not real life.
Well, you know, gentlemen, you know, I don't know if
we're about to
guard or corny or whatever, but I gotta stand up and stick up for Bungie here, because all three of the Call of Duty campaigns that I've played have been training for multiplayer. And as soon as I was done with it, I didn't remember a single thing about it. But when I think back to landing on the Ark, you know, and having Marty O'Donnell cheering me on with an orchestra. And I've got the United Nations Space Command dropping tanks when I need them, and I'm taking on the Covenant, and there's a galactic jihad underway.
To some nukes going off in the middle of, I don't know, somewhere.
Ah, Motherland!
If you think about it, they're not that different, you know? Halo, Call of Duty, it's all the same
it's
stuff.
It's either like we nuke one part of the world or we nuke the entire galaxy. It's a
Halo is basically just Call of Duty in space. That's all it is.
I mean, there's Marines. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Case in point.
Wow.
And the bad guys don't speak the same language. I mean, just kidding.
A little oversimplification, don't you think?
Well, yeah. You know, they're, and I can understand that. There's, you know, there's something to be said. I know Marty O'Donnell's like the guy everybody loves to point to as the game composer extraordinaire. But but Modern Warfare 2 was scored by Hans Zimmer, who also did The Dark Knight, Batman Begins. He's done over 100 movies, including Pirates of the Caribbean, Lion King, all kinds of really, really, really great soundtracks. And I thought Modern Warfare 2 and Modern Warfare 1 soundtracks were absolutely second to none. Really amazing soundtracks. And the effects, the sound effects in that were unbelievably awesome. I mean, all the guns just sounded so realistic and really got you pumped and everything. I really thought it was amazing. And the, you know, there was a lot of very, very memorable story moments. I mean, in my mind, Modern Warfare 2's campaign took a backseat to Modern Warfare 1's, but both of those had a lot of memorable stuff that I've gone and played both of those back a second time over on Veteran, for the achievements, but also for more of a challenge, after having finished and gotten through the progression of difficulty in the campaign in Modern Warfare, on both of those. And, you know, I found it just as fun, really, the second time through, even though I knew the story, because it was a greater challenge, it was a greater sense of realism, and it was a greater sense of risk and loss. So, it was, you know, I really got to stand up for that campaign as well.
I think we should call Activision and tell them that their spokesperson is in this podcast. Hold on, guys. I know how you can make a lot more money.
Turns out that Fu is actually like Hans Zimmer's PR manager. I know that all of you guys think Marty O'Donnell's really cool, but he's not. Look, Hans Zimmer's where it's at, all right? No, Hans Zimmer's a good... I enjoyed Modern Warfare 2's soundtrack. The issue I have is that Modern Warfare 2's soundtrack is just more of, you know, the kind of like classic bass, you know, rock, just whereas Halo did something novel with, you know, the Gregorian chanting, like every time you hear that, like you think Halo.
Okay, but now you're talking about Halo 1, because Halo 2,
as a franchise.
No, what I'm saying is I really liked the soundtrack for Halo 1 a lot. I really, really, really liked that. And I thought it was, you know, a major step forward in game soundtracks in general. Once we got to Halo 2, I liked that too, but it wasn't really so much of a game soundtrack as it was kind of like a movie soundtrack.
It was a little more mellow and more orchestra.
Well, it was some of that, but it was also a lot of rock and stuff. And I mean, you know, you got the Halo 2 soundtrack on CD.
Halo.
It's like, it's got some themes, but it also has like a bunch of rock, like from you know, rock bands and stuff like that that just played no lyrics and had some good stuff in there. But then Halo 3, then we diverged to the piano and the some of the other themes. I honestly really did not like the Halo 3 soundtrack very much at all, because I thought the piano was I didn't think that was successful in building a sense of like kind of emotion getting you into the scene, really, right. Because it was just so mellow, and this is a freaking war game where you're blowing people's heads off and stuff, and you got like ding, 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 you know, the piano and stuff. It just doesn't go with that very well at all. Well, you got really dramatic elements, like lots of strings and lots of the Gregorian chant, and you know, that really brings you into the whole to the awe of the whole thing, you know, to the scale, the importance of the whole scenario, while the piano is just kind of like, you know, kind of wistful and not dramatic at all.
I think that they should have put ragtime tunes in Halo 3. That would have been great.
Man.
I really like some of like 1940s LP. I think you did a good job with Halo 3. I like the piano myself. With the E3 trailer.
I'd say the Halo soundtrack's gone Mario.
I heard that.
With the E3 trailer, you're saying?
Yeah, the Halo 3 trailer is walking up to the crater for the key thingy to the Ark, and the music just swells, and it's got the piano, and it's like Master Chief just appears, and then the music just picks up, and it just gave me shivers. Like, the piano just creates a... I don't even know how to explain it, but I think it works for me anyway.
It was kind of almost like a sense of awesomeness to me. Kind of just like,
yeah, it's
awe.
Just awe.
The only time I really felt that was maybe sometime, probably about two-thirds of the way, and there was a few riffs that really like got me going to the same scale of Halo 1, but in a more modern way. But then in the very, very beginning, the beginning sequence almost brought me to tears, like when Cortana was coming and everything, because obviously we've been hyped up about this forever. You know, we've been talking about it forever, and we were so ready, you know, and when it was like the piano and then the chant in the background and her kind of coming in and then just having that speech and stuff, that was just a very cool way of doing it. Well, but like, it's like, it just kind of went downhill, I thought, from that, especially that whole sequence in the underground by the dam and everything, where you know you were it was like the last human base there, and then you had to evacuate. You know you had to get all through that. It was the second level.
Yeah, that felt like Halo 1.
Music on that sucked. I thought it was absolutely terrible. Like they had that kind of like.
It was too mellow.
Music, it was trying to be some kind of marine type music, but I thought it failed miserably. It just sounded totally campy to me, which is a shame because, you know, everything in Halo 1, I didn't ever feel a sense of like campiness going on with that. But it was in general, it was an increased sense of campiness as you got through the campaigns in Halo 2 and way more so in Halo 3 when you got the Marines just playing rap ass the whole time. And they're just like cracking jokes with each other, and it's like they're trying to, you know, save humanity here. So
yeah, I think another part of the Halo 3 campaign, Greg, we can hear that.
Oh, sorry.
Greg!
Sorry. Greg, what are you doing?
Just humming it.
We already know what it sounds like.
No, you're humming right over Dustin's monologue. Like,
dude. I thought it would add some emphasis to it.
No. I think one of the problems with the Halo 3 campaign was they tried to introduce too much in a small time window. Like, I think for Halo 1, they did it really well. For Halo 2, it was just drawn out way too long to make the point that it did. And then Halo 3, they tried to wrap so much up in this game.
I think in Halo 3 they tried too much to make it like Halo 1.
Why didn't they really succeed?
Really?
I mean, what,
I don't,
what
I don't think
the things,
they did.
What are some of the things that were successful about Halo 1? You have.
I thought the first two levels were very good. I thought those were done really well because it wasn't too much at one time, and it kind of felt like you were in this vulnerable position, kind of like how you were in Halo 1. And then when you went to Savo Highway, it just seemed like it fell apart from there.
I mean, I think the second that you see the flood in Halo 3, it just goes, you're just like, oh, great. You know,
the flood's easy.
Oh, there's this big old thing. Let's go get him. Oh, wait, we got to stop the flood.
What was cool about the flood in Halo 1, though, when you think about it? When you first encounter the flood.
It was scary.
It's dark. It's got freaky music. It's foggy. You get like little audio experts from your team that's kind of saying they're everywhere. Wow, where are they? And they get cut off, and it's like, yeah, it is scary as hell. When you first encounter the flood,
and it's a novelty from there on.
Now, is it just because we've already encountered the flood before? I don't think so. I think they just didn't really put an effort into making it like the survival horror feeling that the flood was in Halo 1, and even in Halo 2, they did a good job, I think, in general on that.
Yeah, like, I think part of it is it wasn't on Halo and it was on familiar ground where it really didn't feel like it fit.
Well, like on Halo 1, like when I finished Halo 1 the first time, the one level maybe most people agree that after playing it, the hated was the library.
Of course.
Then like playing Halo 2 and Halo 3, I just appreciated the library more for what it did for the Halo universe as a whole, because after then that was the only level that I can remember still playing that's even fun at all, playing the flood. Because anything from there on out, it's just ridiculously stupid. It's not even fun anymore. It's like, oh, it's not even hard. It's just dumb. You know, all you need is either a shotgun and a sword.
It seems like Halo 3 suffers from what trilogy movies suffer from. The first one's great, the second one's crap, and the third one's just a failed attempt at wrapping
things up. I mean, it was just that they understood there was, for Halo 1, there was only one thing that they had to do was capture an audience. With Halo 2 and 3, they had to do other things, like get it out in time, make money on it, you know. I mean, I'm pretty sure that at the height of Halo 1, one of their main priorities wasn't it rushing it out to get it out by this time.
But that's when, as a developer, they should make the smart decision of not setting dates that they feel iffy about. It's set dates where you know you can get this done by and then push it up if you need to.
Yeah.
And I think the whole thing with Microsoft...
Are we sure they're the ones setting
dates? What?
Are we sure Bungie's the one setting the dates, or is Microsoft setting the dates? And
I'm not sure who it is, but I mean, I think Bungie should, unless there was some contract that they signed, should stand up for their product.
I mean, that's what I was kind of leaning to, is that Microsoft might be putting the pressure on them.
Yeah.
The case,
yeah.
I'm still have my grudge against Microsoft and 343 Industries with Frankie. It's like, Halo should have stayed with Bungie. It should be a Bungie product, not this corporate
glorified.
Yeah, Halo crap.
And, I mean, it sold a lot because it was a good game, not because it was like all these people just wanted to blow things up. It was a good story. It was the first time... Okay, I don't really count GoldenEye as... I'm looking above GoldenEye, that and a first-person shooter actually played like it should on a console. And that's what it did.
Well, you know, here's one thing I don't get, is that... you know how Bungie always talks about we have to continue the Halo aesthetic kind of for our fans, the Halo feel. And, you know, they talk about the 30 seconds of fun being repeated all over again. It's kind of like they have all this stuff in their head that Halo is supposed to be, but it's like they're doing something wrong because they're not really achieving. Yes, they're achieving a game that feels and plays the same way, yeah. But is it, you know, it like the campaign? Is it really any better? No, it's really been, I think, downhill. Pretty much everybody would say it got worse from Halo 1 to Halo 2 to Halo 3. You know, I think there's measurable ways to say how it got worse, you know? Like, in Halo 1, there was the Marines, you know, sometimes they would be like, woohoo, you know, because, yeah, they're freaking driving, you know, pedal to the metal in a Warthog on an alien planet, yeah. Shooting aliens. I mean, it's awesome. But they wouldn't just go off and off and off on that forever and just constantly making jokes and playing grab ass with each other when the fate of humanity is on the brink here, and they're fighting for their lives, you know, and they don't have battle armor or anything like that. And but they're just like, oh, in your face, sucker, you know, saying stupid stuff the whole time. And it's just ridiculous. It takes you out of the realism. It's not funny. I mean, it is sort of, but it's not like it. The funny makes it less. It makes the story less believable and less less. It loses that whole sense of like I'm fighting for the fate of humanity here.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not against being funny in a game or something, but I just think overdid it. You know, even in Halo 2, to an extent, they were pushing it in Halo 2. And Halo 3, they went way off the deep end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I really enjoyed ODST, though. I really enjoyed the campaign.
ODST's campaign was very good.
Bungie redeemed themselves in my eyes with ODST a little bit. I mean, not too great to a degree.
I hope they do another ODST something. I mean, Halo 3, Halo Reach ODST, just something. That was just do it
with
similar.
Reach Vidoc that just came out, it made me very hopeful that they've gutted the engine and they talked about having a completely different storyline and a different way of approaching how to really present the story that they want to say without making a strictly scripted encounter with.
Yeah, they want it to be your story. They don't want it to be like.
I
didn't know how it's gonna end.
I'm not gonna put my money on it too much, but
yeah, same here.
With the recent Vidoc, I'm very hopeful that they will change the game style with the since they're kind of working on a new storyline now that's completely not related to Master Chief, that they have some...
Except it is. With. And you know what happens.
You know it is.
Yeah, that's the issue I have with prequels. It's that no matter what happens, no matter... I mean, even if I don't know the internal storyline of Reach, I know what happens in the end. Like, I know exactly how that story is going to end. Like,
it's going to get glassed.
But what story are you talking about?
I'm talking about, like, the main story. Like, everything that they're doing, everything that they're fighting for... It's essentially fighting the Covenant. I know how that battle ends. I know how the war with the Covenant ends.
If I shoot 10 police in the face, or if I don't shoot them, we are going to lose.
I mean, yeah, you do have to take into consideration the whole Halo universe, but looking at just the game itself, I think it'll kind of stand out among...
You think it'll go beyond Reach? There's two things I hope. I hope it doesn't go beyond Reach, and I hope it doesn't... There are no Flood. That was what ruined Halo Wars. I hope there's no Flood whatsoever.
I hope that we get to play as the Arbiter. That's going to be great.
There shouldn't be any Flood.
It won't be the same one, though, because the Arbiter wasn't made the Arbiter until after the fall of the first Halo.
No, they're going to retcon that in. That's the twist.
No,
that's how it's not a problem.
There's got to be, I know they've talked about how it's not going to be like strictly canon to Halo, but if they go too far off canon, it's just going to be a real disappointment to me.
It's going to be like the new Star Trek movies where it sets up a different universe.
Oh, dude, that
they go back in time. Like, the Arbiter goes back in time to use the red matter.
Bungie does that, I'll be upset.
That's why he went through the portal. Because remember at the end, he went through the other side of the portal.
Like, the Arbiter's going to meet Leonard Nimoy, like, at Reach.
And he's going to walk into a cave on a giant planet, and he's right there. Whoa, what a coincidence.
He's going to be like, James? He's like, no, I'm the Arbiter.
What you been doing, boy?
You don't know me, but I know you. We end up being best friends.
That would be funny if
you're kidding me.
It'd be funny if you saw Arbiter with a beard.
Yeah. How would he eat, man?
On the middle of Hoth.
William Shatner to voice the Arbiter.
No, not Shatner. They should have Sean Connery. Oh, not.
About what we're talking about, that's kind of another thing Halo has a bad rep for, is its campaign. You don't really hear anything about the Call of Duty campaign too much, except for...
It sucks.
...two quarrels that people say about Modern Warfare 2 that it sucks. But you never hear discussions about the flow of the campaign and how that fits with canon. But when you talk about Halo, everything doesn't fit with canon, and... Does it?
I mean, it just tells you who plays what games, because like the Halo people play multiplayer, but they care about the story. A lot of people who play Call of Duty do care about it, but a lot of them don't. So I'm gonna guess that's where that comes from.
So are you saying that Halo's campaign is more influential on people who play Halo over Call of Duty, or?
I would say yes.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. It's just it's a different situation. You got Halo takes place a couple hundred years in the future here. You got an entirely different, almost an entirely different human race, because you had an entirely different distribution of nations and the whole UNSC and everything. You got different planets being colonized. You got all kinds of different weapons and military and all kinds of different stuff. It's almost like an entirely different universe. So there's so much more that they have to flesh out, that they have to have in a backstory to support it and make it believable to some extent anyway, that that there's more to it, and it becomes this canon. It becomes this this whole backstory and this whole system that interlocks, kind of thing. While in Modern Warfare 2, it takes place in relatively modern day, and
Modern Warfare.
Yeah, right. Sorry. So it's not. I mean, you really just have to build on the previous game. So
that
there's not a whole lot to stick with as far as canon. You don't have to worry about the only thing you have to worry about is the precedent that the previous game set, as far as like what the characters are currently doing and what the countries are currently doing. You don't have to worry about, you got these different alien races, you got these, these different alien leaders that are in different spaceships in different places at different times. You got, all this different stuff with the political climate on Earth, the arc, the different stuff throughout the universe, the different Halos, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have to worry about the gigantic scale of Modern Warfare 2.
Do you think
it doesn't lessen the story any. I still think the story in general, like overarching story, you know, I think really fits together well, and the characters really fit together well, and they're believable.
Do you think that the next Halo game will be about Onyx?
I don't think the next Halo game will be a Bungie game.
Out of the book. The Ghosts of Onyx. I think the next, but 343 might do.
Yeah, the third Halo universe. Let's go back and retcon that too. I think that people are just in general more invested in sci-fi stories than they are like modern day warfare stories.
Sure.
I mean, look at Mass Effect. Like, the reason people play Mass Effect is for the amazing storyline, because, I mean, with sci-fi, you are able to craft entire universes. Like Fu was saying, like in Mass Effect, like they were able to craft this entire, you know, ecosystem of different races and how they, you know, interact with each other. And I mean, even going as far as to like how they reproduce, like you can go into the Codex and learn that, you know, Krogans have like four testicles. Like you didn't need to know that, but they went ahead and told you that.
Right.
The Asari are not male or female.
Exactly. Like, I mean, just people can become more invested in those universes than they can, say, Modern Warfare.
I guess there's just more to lose because there's more to gain.
What are they going to tell you in Modern Warfare's universe? Like, Price uses an M16-4A. It's awesome. Like, you don't care about that. But if I told you, dude, Elcor, like, they have the inability to express emotions. So they have to, like, speak in all their emotions. So they're like, exasperated response. Like, that is infinitely more interesting.
Did you encounter an Elcor in Mass Effect 2? Is that
I only saw one. It was
there
the
was
merchant
only one
on Omega.
Yeah, the merchant on Omega.
Yeah.
Well, you had to help that guy in Omega 2, the other. Anyway, whatever.
Not to go off on Mass Effect 2, but I love the side conversations that you don't interact with, but you can just stand there and listen to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
Those would be great. Like, there's this one scene on I forget what it's called, Ilium, I think that's the planet, where Liar is, but anyway, you're standing in the bar on Ilium, and you're listening to this Quarian girl in this. What are they called? What Garrus is? I've already forgotten.
Turians.
The Turians, yeah. And they're talking to each other, and like he's like trying to catch her on the rebound. She's talking about her past boyfriend. She's like, my past boyfriend just cared about himself, and he's like, oh man, I know. Men can be so ungracious sometimes. And then she's like, I don't think I'm going to be dating for a while. He's like, no, you have to start dating again. You can't let this get to me. It's just funny, like, listening to this Turian try to catch this, you know, Quarian on the rebound is awesome. That's the kind of stuff that gets me invested in sci-fi. Just these crazy, you know, ability to flesh out the universe.
Yeah. It's the same concept in fantasy, you know. You got to, like in Dragon Age, they do the same thing. They have tons of stuff in the Codex. They have people, all the different characters talking to each other. But yeah, it's Mass Effect is definitely more creative than something like Dragon Age, though.
Well, I think that you can take greater artistic license with sci-fi than you can with fantasy in general. Just because, I mean, if you create something in sci-fi, I mean, you have the entire universe to work with. Like, if you create a gigantic laser that, you know, can shoot through universes and create different timelines and stuff, like, nobody's going to question that. Nobody's going to question the logistics of that. But if you try to do that in fantasy, it's like, how does this work? Does it use the arcane magics, or does it use the dark magics of the, you know, the witches of Sherwood Forest? Like,
well, see, you're just explaining it right there. That's, you don't really have to get into the details on something.
Yeah, but you have to, like, you really have to get, like, campy with it. You have to take some serious, you know, leaps of faith with fantasy story if you're going to flesh stuff like that out.
Well, that's the trade-off, right? You're either campy with fantasy, or you're really stretching it with the technology on sci-fi.
Exactly,
and having to go into extreme detail on the technology and sci-fi just to make it believable. So that's the trade-off, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess that is a trade-off. But I mean, I suppose that if I could choose, I'd rather do fantasy just so that I could make those kind of like the Dark Witches of Dust Pettigrew Forest, named after Lord Pettigrew of the 5th Brigade. Forged in the, you know, I don't even know. Forged in the blacksmith irons and molds. In the 28th Age of Reckoning, Dustin Pettigrew went off on his epic journey of vast proportion.
Man, you got this down. I don't know, like,
we know what the next Podtech or RPG is going to be about.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah. Dustin Pettigrew in the 28th Age of Reckoning. Oh. I'm going to write that fanfic.
I shall smite thee.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I'm going to have to get going here soon.
Yeah.
All right.
We're ready to wrap this up. So, I'm sure this conversation could probably go on for hours and hours, but we'll definitely be visiting this again, probably when Reach comes out and when the next Call of Duty comes out. So,
oh, yes.
This is definitely not the end of the discussion, but it was...
Fumo, can I get you to say it now? You want to play the beta with me?
I don't have ODST.
What?
I also don't have gold.
Wow.
You don't have gold anymore?
But no, I wish I didn't have gold.
Do you still feel easy?
Are you going to get gold?
Ew. I'm going to get gold again after a while. But yeah, I'm going just silver lately. Been doing, actually been playing Dragon Age quite a bit. Got that for game testing at EA. And I've also been trying
game
a little
testing?
Bit.
What are you talking
yeah,
about?
At EA Maitland at Tiburon. They do game testing there, so you go there for a couple hours, test a unreleased game at EA Tiburon in Maitland in Florida. But
oh,
you
got the inside.
It's pretty
so
sweet.
Can you
man.
Just can you just be anybody? Could just grandma walk in there and do it?
I mean, you have to kind of sign up for it, and then I think they pick based on different demographics that they're
you
looking for.
Sign the NDA.
Types of gamers.
So what games you play, huh?
I what can't say. NDA.
NDA. Yep. NDA.
Yep.
Tell you, but I have to kill you. I have been playing a little bit of free-to-play MMOs as well, though.
What?
And I've been messing with those while I don't have Xbox Live.
Free-to-play.
Oh.
Free
this
MMOs.
Frito plays. I was like, Fritos?
The Frito what? MMO would be great. I love Fritos. Like bean
I'm
dip.
I'm up for the Dorito one next.
Yeah. You can upgrade your bean dip to spicy. That's progression in that game.
Tabasco sauce included.
Press 2 to launch bean dip. Press 2 to launch bean dip.
Instead of having to pay to repair your item durability, you have to pay to like refresh your expiration date on the bean dip.
Oh, goodness.
It's just like World
your
Warcraft.
Doritos have gone stale.
To upgrade freshness, please close the bag.
That's a 75% armor decrease. Yep. You can't go on a raid with that debuff, man. You really need to. You need to really refresh your expiration date. We can't go, you know, fight the 37th, you know, Brigade of Mordor if you got this, you know, nasty expired bean dip. Oh man,
gotta get the good stuff, man.
I know, yeah. Okay. Sauron
hey,
loves bean dip.
Comments before we just go ahead and wrap this up.
I think yep. Halo 3 is better than Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Okay,
there you go. Just cut.
Okay, anyone else have any comments?
I'm just kidding. I mean, I really do think that, but they both have served their purpose. I think that, you know, it's always good to have two best titles so that there isn't always considered a best one, so they can both work off each other and, you know, If it was just Call of Duty or just Halo, it'd be pretty boring because there'd be no competition. You know, okay. There would be nothing else to work off of because if it was just Halo, then they probably wouldn't change things as much as they do. If it was just Call of Duty, they wouldn't change things as much as they do or design it the way they would. You know, it kind of defines them and understands that, you know, this is how we are different. This is how we need to make the game. You know?
Cool.
So I think that one exists because the other one does.
I think that it's kind of like comparing like Monopoly and Sorry, the board games.
Yes.
It's like they're similar. You're moving pieces around a board, but the gameplay is completely different. The way that you score and win in those games. Like the only thing that in, you know, they're both FPS games. You both shoot guns. But the gameplay is completely different in both of them. The reason that I choose Halo over Modern Warfare 2 is because of the community. It all goes back to community. The reason I got, you know, fairly competent at Halo is because I played it a whole bunch, because I had people in Podtacular to play with.
It's only because
back
of
in Halo 2.
It's only because of Red vs. Blue.
It's weird, because I'm elite. I just turned elite, yes. But, I mean, it does go back
it's
to
the
community.
Bean dip, man. It's got to be the bean dip.
Yeah, I've got some fresh bean dip. It's awesome.
okay, well, thanks everyone for tuning in and downloading the episode. Next week we will be doing customs and creations.
Ooh, my favorite.
Go ahead and get those in, even though we might not create much anymore, but I'm sure there's still new customs coming about here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead and send those in for next week. I want to thank Jack and Zerg Deej both for coming on. They had to leave early.
Where are they from again?
Jack Fire Dragon is from My Halo Life, and Zerg Deej is from Tide the Leader.
Tide the Leader.
Yep.
So
we couldn't get Ryan on.
No. I tried, but he didn't respond to the email.
He'll be on. We'll try getting on next. Tales the Foxhole.
Yes, Tales from the Foxhole. Anyway, thanks to Fumo for taking the time to come record with us.
We love it when you're on, Foo. We're not gonna front.
Well, thanks for not fronting, G.
That's what I do. What can you say?
And thanks.
Yeah, that was fun, man. That was an interesting conversation. Yeah, and I agree with Brent. You know, it's kind of like comparing Monopoly to Sorry, Halo being Sorry. But
the man who started this whole thing.
No, but it is entirely different in the sense that, you know, Halo is a lot more team oriented. It's also a lot more conducive for like an even competitive match for people that are looking for that kind of thing. You know, while Call of Duty has more of the progression and the kind of casual friendly experience where people don't have to worry always about winning necessarily. So, yeah. Different goals for the games, which make them entirely different.
Nice. And then thanks for PK, our four mods, for coming.
It's been fun.
Oh, he's a mod now? That's pretty awesome.
He's been a mod for a while.
I'm kidding. I know. Let's be joking, because it took him forever, and then he was a mod, and then he wasn't a mod, and then he wasn't a mod for a long time. Now he's a mod again.
So until next week, I am Dust Storm.
I guess I'll go next. Who knows? Late. I'm Chillies.
I'm Brent Gamer.
Fumo Jive.
I'm Pankillo5.
This week on the Gamercast Network, Podtacular is revisiting the good old Call of Duty versus Halo roundtable, building on top of past discussions with the new games and info that has been introduced into the gaming industry. Episode 91 of the Post Game Report features discussions about Bioshock 2, Dante's Inferno, Halo Legends, and much, much more. In episode 102 of the Sarcastic Gamer Red Show, Doc, Dave, and Lano discuss MAG, the Heavy Rain demo, and Bioshock 2. Discover the community that brings you all these great podcasts and more at GamercastNetwork.com.